Welcome to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. This is Corinne, and as we usually do, let's begin with our brief period of silence together. Turning attention from without to within, and being willing to let go of everything. And if we notice any resistance to that, just noticing that resistance and looking at that with the Holy Spirit. We can just be willing. We don't have to actually do this, but just being willing to release everything. Our perceptions, our beliefs, everything that would stand in the way of our remembering truth. Even releasing the Course. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil open mind, these are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives. And we gladly place Holy Spirit in charge tonight by our request. With a love in your heart and light in your mind, coming together to our perception of right here, right now. Oh, all righty. So I'm looking forward to continuing the section that we started last week. We had a great discussion last week. We're in the section called Faith, Belief, and Vision. This corresponds to the Sparkle Edition, page 507. It's the first full paragraph on the page. It begins with the sentence, faith and belief become attached to vision. In the original edition by Course in Miracles Society, that corresponds to chapter 21, part 4, paragraph number 35. In FIP, that is chapter 21, part 3, paragraph number 7, and in the CE, it is page 668, paragraph number 7, sentence number 2. So we've been reading about the section again, it's called Faith, Belief, and Vision. Instead of trying to, well, I'll just say a couple quick things about what we've read thus far. At least things that stand out to me. My eyes are on a sentence at the moment. It is impossible that the Son of God lacks faith, but he can choose where he would have it be. So we either have faith in nothing, which is faith in the ego, or we have our faith in God. And so it's one or the other. And we talked a little bit last week about what unsteady ground it is to be sort of having one foot in the ego's camp and the other foot in the Holy Spirit's camp. And through this transfer of trust, we're learning that all of our faith can be given to the Holy Spirit, because that's where faith lies. That's where truth is. Just one other sentence from our reading last week. His faith, his belief, and vision are all for you. And when you have accepted them completely instead of yours, you'll have need of them no longer. So the Holy Spirit's faith and belief and vision are all for us. It's all for us to be willing to use instead of our own, only to find that once we do accept them instead of ours, we don't need them in truth. Their faith and vision and belief aren't needed because truth just is. So let's pick up where we left off, and we'll do it as we usually do. We'll read a paragraph or two at a time, then if anybody wants to chime in with any insights, feel free. So let's go for it. Faith and belief become attached to vision, as all the means that once served sin are redirected now toward holiness. For what you think is sin is limitation, and whom you try to limit to the body, you hate because you fear. In your refusal to forgive him, you would condemn him to the body, because the means for sin are dear to you. And so the body has your faith and your belief. But holiness would set your brother free, removing hatred by removing fear, not as a symptom, but at its source. I'll pause there. Immediately, I think of our conversation last week about the first paragraph that we read in this section about hate and how we were having, how it doesn't seem immediately graspable that we would hate, that we would have hate in our hearts. And yet, this is another way of saying it with what we just read, that whom you try to limit to the body, you hate because you fear. So fear is there also, or beneath the hate is fear. And that stands out to me just as limiting our perception to a body brings up unconscious guilt because it isn't true. And so we, you know, again, prefer to keep that guilt out of our awareness. And so there is, you know, there's fear there. There's separation there. There's that unconscious fear and guilt there, or hate. I just want to see if I have anything else to add. I like this sentence also. In your refusal to forgive him, you would condemn him to the body because the means for sin are dear to you. So when we don't forgive, in other words, when we're not giving our perceptions, our beliefs to Holy Spirit, we're condemning one another and ourselves to the body. We're seeing and believing what the body's eyes are showing us versus being willing to see with the Holy Spirit's vision. I will pause there. Anybody have anything coming up so far? How about we keep reading? Those who would free their brothers from the body can have no fear. Ooh, that's juicy. Let's read that again. Those who would free their brothers from the body can have no fear. They have renounced the means for sin by choosing to let all limitations be removed. Desiring to look upon their brothers in holiness, the power of belief and faith goes far beyond the body, supporting vision, not obstructing it. But first, they chose to recognize how much their faith had limited their understanding of the world, desiring to place its power elsewhere, should another point of view be given them. The miracles which follow this decision are also born of faith. For all who choose to look away from sin are given vision and are led to holiness. This first sentence really stands out to me because my words that I had are escaping me. It's just really powerful to think about. Freeing our brothers from the body means that we have no fear. So if we are trusting what our body's eyes show us, which can only be other bodies, then of course we're going to have fear. Of course there's going to be justification for fear, because with the body's eyes, there are certainly a lot of cause for fear in the world. This, again, is teaching us to use a different type of vision, not relying on the body's eyes, but instead that vision that comes from within that quiet center, that still point within us. I'm going to pause and see if anybody has anything coming up in this moment.
I think that is so amazing, because just that one sentence washes everything away. To be able to do that takes care of everything.
The sentence that I just highlighted?
Yes. About seeing others with the vision, with the new vision.
Desiring to look upon their brothers in holiness, the power of belief and faith goes far beyond the body, supporting vision, not obstructing it. Is that the one?
No, the very first one that you read that you said struck you.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Those who would free their brothers from the body can have no fear. That one.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah, that is. I like how you said that washes everything else away. Am I hearing Homera?
Yeah, I'm still struggling with the first paragraph. I keep reading it over and over, but I'm not really...
Homera, I can barely hear you.
I'm so sorry. Is that better?
Yes, that's better.
I was just saying, could you go back to the first paragraph you read? I'm still kind of like not sure what it means.
Yeah, so there's a lot of... I feel like this whole section has had a lot of sort of heady stuff that can be a little bit confusing. Is there a particular sentence or just in general?
For what you think is sin is limitation, and whom you try to limit to the body, you hate because you fear.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what you think is separation, I like to substitute separation for sin just because it's a little bit more concrete or a little bit more graspable for us at times. What you think is separate is, of course, limited, and who you try to limit to the body, in other words, who you see by me seeing another person as a body, this is saying that there's that unconscious hate, and I'm saying unconscious because this is based on something that came out of our conversation from last week. We hate because we fear. So you could say, I'm going to put this in my own words, and please, if anybody has some insight or anything that they'd like to add, please feel free to jump in. But if I were to see you truly, and I'm talking to you, Homera, just as an example.
Mm-hmm.
If
mm-hmm.
I were to see you truly, I would not be seeing Homera. I would be seeing the Son of God. And
mm-hmm.
I would be, and in that, I would know myself as the Son of God. And our idea that we could be separate from each other, that we could be these bodies, that idea would just be blown away if I were seeing you truly. There is part of me that does not want to see you truly because there's part of me that wants to keep playing this game of separation. So there's also the piece that because I unconsciously think that we pulled this off, like there's part of me that believes that you are Homera, and there's part
mm-hmm.
of me that feels very guilty over that because I think I actually separated from God, or as the Course goes real deep, I think I must have actually killed God to make this happen, to make this whole world
mm-hmm.
happen. And that
mm-hmm.
brings up a lot of unconscious guilt that I don't want to feel, so I'm going to project it onto someone else or something else that then keeps you continuing to seemingly be separate from me. So that fear or that hate keeps a gap between what has no gap. There is no gap between us. But by my thinking that you are Homera, by my thinking that there's a gap between us, by me holding onto, you know, guilt or unconscious guilt or fear in my mind, I'm keeping that gap between us. And that is, in a sense, keeping the whole world going. So,
and that's because I don't want to feel my own guilt over what I think I've done.
Say that again?
And that is because I don't want to, unconsciously, I don't want to feel my own guilt for what I think I've done, which is separated
right.
myself from God. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. We think it's like, I mean, it's the guilt is an intolerable feeling. There's no cause for guilt. There's no need. And that's what we're learning, is that any seeming unconscious guilt, that there's no cause for it. We didn't do anything. This is what we're learning and, you know, coming to remember through our practice and study of the Course. And this unconscious fear and guilt, I feel like, breaks through to the surface in ways that we don't immediately recognize. But if I heard you correctly, my answer was yes.
So then even though we're not aware of it consciously, this guilt is going on all the time. And instead of facing it and feeling our feelings and healing that, we just project it onto one another and just perpetuate the guilt and the hatred, and just the vicious cycle keeps going on.
Right, right, yes. So instead, all those moments that we, whatever it is we feel, whatever it is that's coming up, are those moments for us to, instead of denying it, to say, okay, this is coming up and I'm willing to look at this with you, Holy Spirit. You know, I'm willing to bring this to the light. And so, yes, that bringing it to the light is how we heal it. We're slowly teaching a frightened part of our mind that it didn't do anything wrong.
And Corinne, guilt can be represented by any of the, like, more negative emotions, like anger or depression.
Absolutely.
Or anxiety. Okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep.
Thank you very
Definitely.
Much.
Did that help?
Very much. Thank you.
Okay, good. And it always helps to make it a little bit more concrete, because sometimes the wording of the course is very coursey. And
yes.
It just kind of makes our head spin.
I agree.
Corinne, this is Franny. I'd like to ask a question.
Please.
Yes. In paragraph 8 there's a line 3, as they desire to look upon their brothers in holiness. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about that. I know that, like, this idea of holiness, or like the divine purity that we all are, like when I think of trying to apply that idea in my day-to-day life, so like sometimes I try to use it with coworkers or even my wife sitting across the breakfast table. I do this mental action of saying, I'm choosing to see your holiness, and that's all I want to see. I mean, nothing magical, or I should say miraculous, happens at that point, but it's a mental act that I have to undertake. And it feels kind of clunky, although I'm willing to just keep going forward with it. But can you comment on that? Or, like, how do you see holiness in your brothers?
Yeah, that's a great question, Franny. I, Corinne of herself, cannot.
Okay.
Because, yeah. You know, because I am going to just see through my body's eyes, and I'm going to see through it through my biases and my filters and my lens. So I was trying to find, I don't remember your exact words, because I was trying to find the sentence that you were looking at as you were sharing, because I didn't have the paragraph numbers in my edition. But
sure.
The way that I do it is really by just that tiny little moment, that tiny little act of just turning to the Holy Spirit within, saying help, saying, you know, show me, see for me. There's one part in the course that talks about placing your body under Christ's control and your mind under Christ's guidance. And I don't consciously do that all the time, but, you know, when it comes to mind, I say that to myself, like, I'm placing my mind under your guidance and my body under your control, so I don't need to be concerned about them. But in the everyday interactions, it's always about turning to the Holy Spirit. Like, that, I've always thought that if the course can be boiled down into one, you know, teaching, it's to withhold nothing from the Holy Spirit being, you know, a part of our own right mind that remembers the truth. So it can, I like how you said it can feel clunky, because, you know, it can at times, but
I think you've helped there, Corinne, if I could just jump in where...
Please.
I've been undertaking it myself, like all by myself I'm trying to do this, but I see what you're saying is when you can remember, you know, bring in the Holy Spirit each time. Just kind of let that be sort of the preface for it, and not so much, I'm doing this work, I'm making myself have this vision of holiness in my brother. Like, there's a lot of effort in that, and it feels like there is also.
Yeah.
So
you're reminding me, and I've shared. Yeah, oh, I'm so glad you're reminding me, and I've shared this story before, and I have experiences like this. I can think of a couple recently, but this is always just the clearest example. Where one time I decided on my walk, I was just going to bless everybody. You know, Corinne was going to see with holiness every brother that passed her on the path. And I was exhausted by the end of that walk. Like, it was so draining and so tiring. And it wasn't until through this work and not trying of myself that another time, shortly thereafter, everyone who passed me, I just felt this, like, burst of love for. And I wasn't trying to do it. I was willing instead to just get out of the way, to do my part in, you know, dropping my judgments, and to just let that love flow, just to kind of let it be there. So it is definitely something that we sort of allow instead of ourselves.
Corinne, can I share something?
Sure.
In that same vein of what you were saying, periodically, when I was working, I would be getting a ride to work from one of the coworkers, and as we were riding, I would just get this feeling of love, this huge feeling of love, and because the only person with me was my coworker, who I wasn't in love with or had no romantic desire for or anything in any way whatsoever, it really, the feeling just puzzled me. But there it was. So what I would do was I would turn and look at all the scenery going by, and I would feel that great love also for everything I was seeing, the trees, the cows, everything along the route, including still the coworker. And it was an extraordinary feeling. And I, with that feeling, there was no feeling of myself being there. There was only this huge feeling of love. So I kind of attribute that to that, because it wasn't something I made happen. It just happened.
Yeah. I love that, Meg. Thank you for sharing that. That's really beautiful. It just, you made me think in just some, you know, it's funny. I know this has happened to me recently, and yet I can't come up with the specifics, but when you're witnessing drama, whatever it may be, whatever type of challenging situation, I mean, even just looking at the latest news, you know, horrible, horrific news headlines, there is something in us that we can see with. The moment we look at something with the body's eyes, we're already, you know, judging it as real and awful and horrible. So that's where, again, it's always our task to turn to the Holy Spirit and that sentence, take this from me and look upon it, judging it for me. I just interviewed Tony Ponticello for my podcast, and we were talking on this about this line a lot, this take it from me and look upon it, judging it for me, and how important that is. Because if we're looking at it, we're judging it, you know, we're deciding how it should be. But if we're letting that love, like Meg, you just described that so beautifully, if we're just allowing that love within us to just flow, it almost becomes like we can hold steady. If we're with somebody who's going through something, we can be that compassionate presence and hold steady and be with them and, you know, feel that love for them. We don't have to say anything to them in words. Like, I personally feel, and I've heard actually, who was it? It was Anita Morjani in her book, Dying to Be Me, when she, you know, nearly died of cancer but had this out-of-body experience. She said that people said all different things to her, and one thing that, you know, some people said to her is that, oh, this isn't real. And I just thought those were course students. They had to be, I don't know for sure, but they had to be, you know, well-intentioned Course in Miracles students that are trying to help by telling somebody that the nightmare that they're going through isn't real. When you're on the receiving end of that, it comes across as very unkind. And that was kind of what, you know, she was saying in this book. So we don't have to do this with words. We do this by literally getting out of the way and letting that love come through us, just like you described, Meg. So that's, and then that love as it flows through us flips that switch on in that other person. Maybe we'll get the, you know, confirmation of that. Maybe we won't. But the Holy Spirit in us can only speak to the Holy Spirit in the other person. The ego in us can only speak to the ego in another person. So I just appreciate what you shared, Meg, so thank you.
Corinne, does it matter
yes.
if you say Holy Spirit, Jesus, or God, or, I mean, do you know what
I
mean?
I don't think so. Yeah, I think whoever you feel, you know, that closest connection with, everybody, they're all there to help. So. So I don't think it matters. I was listening to a talk by Robert Perry and Emily Bennington about that, and I think that was kind of what he had shared too. It's just, you know, whatever feels most resonant for you.
Mm, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Beautiful. Let's read another paragraph. Those who believe in sin must think the Holy Spirit asks for sacrifice, for this is how they think their purpose is accomplished. Brothers, the Holy Spirit knows that sacrifice brings nothing. He makes no bargains. And if you seek to limit him, you will hate him because you are afraid. The gift that he has given you is more than anything that stands this side of heaven. The instant for its recognition is at hand. Join your awareness to what has been already joined. The faith you give each other can accomplish this. For he who loves the world is seeing it for you, without one spot of sin upon it, and in the innocence which makes the sight of it as beautiful as heaven. Oh boy, I want to read some of these sentences again. Join your awareness to what has been already joined. The faith you give each other can accomplish this. And this sentence, for he who loves the world is seeing it for you, without one spot of sin upon it, and in the innocence which makes the sight of it as beautiful as heaven. How gorgeous is that? There is the word again. When I read, for he who loves the world is seeing it for you. I'm circling that word for, because there are so many places in the Course where it uses the word for. You know, the Holy Spirit chooses for God for us right here. He who loves the world is seeing it for you. That right there is the reminder over and over again that the Holy Spirit does this for us. Our job is to simply step out of the way. And I love how it says, join your awareness to what has been already joined. So we join our awareness not through like forceful will or, you know, incessant thinking. We join our awareness to what has already been joined by recognizing that we don't know, that I can't do this, I can't do any of this of myself. I can just simply step aside and let my awareness go to where it already is, to let my awareness return, the memory that's already in my mind, return again to my awareness of truth. I love these sentences. Let's go for another paragraph.
Corinne,
your faith in sacrifice. Oh, did I just hear Franny?
Yeah, I just have a question on that word, the world. I thought somewhere it's been said the world is created as an attack on God, or the way that we want it to separate. So I'm a little confused. I wouldn't think the Holy Spirit
yes.
loves the world. It's more like how we must look past it, if anything. So
yeah, that's a great, great, great question, Franny. For he who loves the world is seeing it for you. I would have to do a quick search because on one hand, what you're saying is correct. When we look at the world through the ego's eyes, yes,
right.
we have to look mm-hmm. past it. And at the same time, I know the Course says, I think it's God so loved the world, he gave it to his only begotten son, which is not necessarily talking about the world of form, but maybe more the real world or the world of, the world of truth. For he who loves the world is seeing it for you without one spot of sin upon it and in the innocence which makes the sight of it as beautiful as heaven. Here, this is saying to me that it's talking about the Holy Spirit seeing only the truth in what we've made here in this world and therefore seeing the real world. So looking past, looking past what's false in this world and upholding only what is true in this world, which is love. The Course says in other parts, you know, the only value in the world is whatever part of it you look upon with love. So that all matters. You know, everything that we look upon with love here matters. The love is everything. So we can't certainly see a world here. We look at the world with our body's eyes and we see lots of spots of sin,
right?
We see a lot of guilt and a lot of seeming cause, you know, for attack. We can't see the real world through those eyes. The Holy Spirit does love all of creation. Here's the Holy Spirit's job is going to be complete once. The Holy Spirit has a very specific job in this seeming world of separation. The Course says that, you know, when this is over, the Holy Spirit his job is fulfilled. So this does tell me, I feel like I'm rambling a little bit here, but I'm also thinking out loud, that this is telling me that this is talking about the Holy Spirit seeing the truth, which is love, in this world of form, seeing it without one spot of sin upon it, because that certainly isn't something that we could see here by ourselves. We certainly couldn't see this to be as beautiful as heaven, but if the Holy Spirit is only seeing the love, then certainly it can be that beautiful. So in all of my rambling, did any of that just help?
Yes, it did, Corinne, just to be explicit.
Okay.
I remember reading something where, like, the Holy Spirit can use whatever we've made for sin or to separate, he can use for his purposes. So in that sense, I could see, you know, this world can be used for healing.
Yes.
Rather than just...
Yes,
you know,
and of course, the Course calls it happy dream.
Right.
The Course calls it happy dream, that right now this world is a nightmare, and through the Holy Spirit it will be transformed into a happy dream. And yeah, this quote is very related that you mentioned, Franny,
mm-hmm.
That the Holy Spirit uses everything that the ego
yes.
made, like bodies and like this whole world,
mm-hmm.
For the purposes of salvation. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Igor.
Yeah, beautiful.
Corinne?
The happy dream. Deidre?
Just to add to what Franny was talking about, what's coming forward for me is that the thought system of what we've made on the level of form and the thought system of eternity or God or Holy Spirit doesn't even meet. So when only love is present, only love is real, just like what the Course is teaching us. And so there is nothing else. That's what that line that you were just reading, that Franny asked the question about, brought forward.
I love that. Yeah, that's great, Deidre. Thank you.
Thanks.
That's super helpful. Awesome. Any other questions, or should we read another paragraph? Okay, let's read another one. Your faith in sacrifice has given it great power in your sight. except you do not realize you cannot see because of it. For sacrifice must be exacted of a body and by another body. The mind could neither ask it nor receive it of itself. And no more could the body. The intention is in the mind, which tries to use the body to carry out the means for sin in which the mind believes. Thus is the joining of mind and body an inescapable belief of those who value sin. And so is sacrifice invariably a means for limitation and thus for hate. I'm going to keep reading. Think you the Holy Spirit is concerned with this? He gives not what it is his purpose to lead you from. You think he would deprive you for your good, but good and deprivation are opposites and cannot meaningfully join in any way. It's like saying that the moon and sun are one because they come with night and day, and so they must be joined. Yet sight of one is but the sign that the other has disappeared from sight. Nor is it possible that what gives light be one with what depends on darkness to be seen. Neither demands sacrifice of the other. Yet on the absence of the other does each depend. I feel moved to just read the final paragraph as well in this section. The body was made to be a sacrifice to sin, and in the darkness so it still is seen. Yet in the light of vision it is looked upon quite differently. You can have faith in it to serve the Holy Spirit's goal and give it power to serve as means to help the blind to see. But in their seeing they look past it, as do you. The faith and the belief you gave it belongs beyond. You gave perception and belief and faith from mind to body. Let them now be given back to what produced them and can use them still to save itself from what it made. Oh boy. I felt moved to keep reading because I felt like each paragraph as we read added a little bit more to help understand some of what we started out with. And I feel like the last paragraph sort of captures everything so clearly in saying that what we see, like light and darkness are complete opposites. The presence of one, being aware of one, depends on the presence of the other one being out of the way. So if we're seeing only ego, seeing with ego, that is dependent on keeping the Holy Spirit out. Or if we're now choosing to see with Holy Spirit, that depends on our willingness to see past the form, all the dream figures. The Course says that dream figures that we, the teachers of God, watch the dream figures come and go, shift and change, suffer and die, and yet they are not deceived by the forms that the dream may take. So in this different vision, it's this knowing that despite the appearances that change that we see with the body's eyes, it's knowing that what is beneath that is unchanged and unchangeable. I really like this, the closing two sentences when it says, you gave perception and belief and faith from mind to body. Let them now be given back to what produced them and can use them still to save itself from what it made. So here we are now using our perception repurposed under the Holy Spirit. It's a means to wake up, and our belief and our faith, giving that to the Holy Spirit instead of to the ego, to learn to save itself from the nightmare dreams that it made, to wake up to that happy dream, as Igor mentioned, instead. Any other sentences that stand out to you? Who's that, Meg?
Yeah, I was actually, what really hooked me, I was thinking of perspective, because in actuality, the darkness and the light from a perspective other than the perspective we see, they're always there, both of them. There's the unity because the sun is always there and the moon is always there. And there's darkness in space, but the light from space comes from the sun. But when we're on the earth and the sun is up, a lot of times you don't see the moon. You can actually see the moon. But when your position on the earth changes as the earth rotates and it moves away from the sun, what we then see is that the sun is now absent and what is there is darkness. But if we're looking from a spaceship, you have a totally different perspective and everything is just one. There is no separation as we see on Earth from in light and darkness.
Yeah, that's cool. Thank you, Meg. I like that idea of just that different perspective, whether we're seeing with our feet down here on the floor or if we're up up in space, totally different perspective.
So what we've transcended that nightmare and we've transcended the happy dream. We, from our new perspective, we've transcended all of that, and what we see is unity.
Yeah, thank you for adding that, because that the happy dream is a stepping stone. It is a step. It's not the final goal. So thank you for adding that.
Yeah, the Course mentions it, calls it above the battleground. Yeah, in chapter 23, there's a section called Above the Battleground, where he also invites us to lift up, like you, Meg, said. Thank you.
Yeah. That's great. I love that section. Thank you, Igor. Awesome. Any other comments, questions, insights? We can start. Actually, it's a new section in my book. It's The Fear to Look Within. I don't know. Yes, that's an FIP. It looks like it's in the other ones, too. Shall we go for it? Anybody else have anything to add? All right, we're doing it. The fear to look within. The Holy Spirit will never teach you that you are sinful. Errors he will correct, but this makes no one fearful. You are indeed afraid to look within and see the sin you think is there. This you would not be fearful to admit. Fear in association with sin, the ego deems quite appropriate and smiles approvingly. It has no fear to let you feel ashamed. It doubts not your belief and faith in sin. Its temples do not shake because of this. Your faith that sin is there, but witnesses to your desire that it be there to see. This merely seems to be the source of fear. I feel moved to keep reading. We're doing lots of reading tonight. I'm going to keep going for it. Remember that the ego is not alone. Its rule is tempered, and its unknown enemy, whom it cannot even see, it fears. Loudly, the ego tells you not to look inward, for if you do, your eyes will light on sin, and God will strike you blind. This you believe, and so you do not look. Yet this is not the ego's hidden fear, nor yours who serve it. Loudly, indeed, the ego claims it is, too loudly and too often. For underneath this constant shout and frantic proclamation, the ego is not certain it is so. Beneath your fear to look within because of sin is yet another fear, and one which makes the ego tremble. What if you looked within and saw no sin? This fearful question is one the ego never asks. And you who ask it now are threatening the ego's whole defensive system too seriously for it to bother to pretend it is your friend. Those who have joined their brothers have detached themselves from their belief that their identity lies in the ego. A holy relationship is one in which you join with what is part of you in truth. And your belief in sin has been already shaken, nor are you now entirely unwilling to look within and see it not. And there I will pause.
This is great stuff. You know? Literally, yesterday I was doing a regression session to a young woman, and you know, she had this problem with that everyone is betraying her in this lifetime. And we dive deep in so that it comes from her past lifetime. And she saw, you know, when we got there, she switched to whisper. You know, she said, no, we can't go there. I did something very bad there. No. She started looking like this, like, oh, I did something terrible there. No, we can't look at this, you know. And this just like illustration, wonderful illustration of this loudly, yeah, in paragraph 2, sentence 3. Loudly, the ego tells you not to look inward, for if you do, your eyes will light on sin, and God will strike you blind. How beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you, Igor. Yeah, so I'm thinking of Craig Villarubias. My friend Craig did a documentary a few years back about A Course in Miracles, and he interviewed Jacob Glass, which I had never been familiar with Jacob or his teaching, but he was awesome. And one of the things he talked about was how you see this sort of cultural message in a lot of movies about how dangerous it is to look within. And he cited a bunch of different movies about, like, you know, a person going within and, like, finding that, like, you know, they need an exorcism. And he gave a bunch of different movie examples, and I can't think of any of these movies off the top of my head, but I was just chuckling and laughing because, you know, we're only just now catching on, I think, as a culture to the idea that going within is actually a good thing. And that's, I think, why mindfulness is taking off and meditation and that sort of thing. But I love how it says, you know, this is initially the ego is saying, don't look within because you're going to, you know, just like the sentence that you read, Igor, God will strike you blind because of the sin that's there. But that's not what the ego is really afraid of. It's keeping us from looking within with that as a reason. But as these paragraphs went on, I love how it goes to bring us to the question, what if we looked within and saw no sin? And that is what shakes the ego to its core, because that's what undoes the ego. The ego depends on this belief that we are guilty, that we've done something terrible. And what if we haven't? What if we haven't? That just is, I don't know if any, I'm feeling it right now. That's the pause in my voice, is that I'm feeling it, that what if we look within and see no sin, and how innocent we are, completely, completely innocent. And if we can embrace that innocence, we open up to, again, remembering that which we chose to forget. And
hi,
the ego's
Karen.
Not part of that. Deidre, is that you?
Yeah. What you just said, what if we could look within and see no sin, is exactly what Spirit sees in us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
yeah.
why the two thought systems never meet, because they can't. You can't have belief in sin and belief in innocence. They're two completely opposing things. And only one of them is true. Thank God. So,
I love how you just, it was right before you said that how two thought systems don't, that this is how the Holy Spirit sees. Yes.
Okay.
This is how the Holy Spirit sees. The Holy Spirit looks within and sees no sin and sees only innocence. That's how that's the Holy Spirit's job. And that's why we need the Holy Spirit to do that for us.
Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful. That was so helpful, Deidre. Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you.
Love it.
Speaking about movies, though, I have to mention the Inception masterpiece, yeah, because this is very related about going deeper into the mind and looking within, if you have seen it.
I haven't, but I've heard it's good. So you recommend it, Igor?
It's just Christopher Nolan made this movie, and he also made Memento movie, which is also related about how we fool ourselves, deceive ourselves, and then cut off our memory, so that we have false evidences and we move in a completely wrong direction. So I guess he knows something, you know. those two movies he made are, and Inception is just absolutely the best movie. I, you know, for quite a while after watching this movie, I thought that I will never be able to watch movies again. You know, it was very unusual sense of completion. You know, like, but that's it. Why would I want to watch another movie if the best movie I would see is Inception and I have already seen it? You know, like, that's it, it's done. The whole Hollywood can be shut down because it was invented, it was evolving just to make this movie possible, and now
that's
it's done.
Funny.
Yeah, and 2 years, 2 years after that, I made the course, and I got this, felt the same feeling. Wow, that's it, that's the book. You know, it's done. Why would I read any other book after that?
I agree with you, Igor, about Inception. That movie was just phenomenal.
Cool. I'll have to check it out then.
Yeah, because it's a dream within a dream within a dream within a dream. It's just a wonderful movie. Very full of making concrete what we think are images. It's really good.
Awesome. I want to add something that's just coming up, not related to the movie Inception because I haven't seen it, but some of you may have seen, and this is from a little while ago, I had done a video blog on this, and I just feel moved to share this story again because we are talking about our innocence and how the Holy Spirit looks within and sees no guilt. And I had been having this like belly pain and opened up the course book. My eyes went on this exact line where it says, "The body will remain guilt's messenger and will act as it directs as long as you believe that guilt is real." And I remember reflecting on that sentence because it said, again, the body will remain guilt's messenger and will act as it directs as long as you believe that guilt is real. Not as long as you believe that the body is real, but as long as you believe that guilt is real. And I immediately had this feeling wash over me of just, there is no guilt in me. There is no guilt in me. And Corrine Walson, I had shared this with her, and she said, "There's no guilt in me." And she added, "Because there is no guilt in God." So I want to leave us with this idea of walking around with this idea that there is no guilt in you. There's no guilt in me. So saying that for yourself, because there is none in God. And if there's no guilt in me because there's none in God, that means there's no guilt in anyone else. When I did this, immediately 1,000 grievances came up. Like, well, this person did that and this one did that. So each one then became an opportunity to look at with the Holy Spirit to release the chains that I was placing on, you know, these memories, these grievances. So I just felt moved to end the call with that because of what this is bringing us to, of what this is talking about with looking within and seeing no sin. You are not guilty. We are not guilty, and neither are any of our brothers, and we can be willing to let the Holy Spirit show us the truth of that. So there is no guilt in me, in you, because there is none in God, and that means there's no guilt in anyone else either. And if that doesn't feel believable, then that is the great opportunity to look at what's coming up with the Holy Spirit. Any final words before we conclude for the week? Sounds like we're good. All right, everybody. Thank you so much. I love you all, and I'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great everyone. Week, champions.
Love you all.
Bye, everyone. Love you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.